We extend Christian greetings to each one today. I can say that it's a blessing to be back with the home folks. As our family had been gone for some time, I can say I was also blessed with the service so far. I was blessed with Brother Robert's devotional. We talked about the lost sheep. I think those of us who have been born again have experienced being lost and being found. And the joy that comes from being found is indescribable. It's something that only God's children can know. The Bible talks in different places about falling away. I'd like to read a few verses. Starting 1 Timothy 4, the first two verses here. It says, "Now the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their conscience seared with a hot iron." Let's turn over to 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 through 5. "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away." How can we avoid being one of those who fall away? Satan desires to have each and every one of us. And today I would like to share some different thoughts, some causes of apostasy. We do good to take heed to ourselves. Satan's tactics are to create a platform or a foothold in each of us from which he can have a base to do his work. I would like to cover quite a bit of ground today, talk about some various different things. And it is my desire that you open your hearts and allow the Holy Spirit to speak to your heart. On June the 6th of 1944, the Normandy invasion happened. It's what they call D-Day. Nazi Germany had taken over several countries, killed many people they considered inferior to themselves. France was one of the countries taken over by them. And on June the 6th, 1944, 156,000 American, British, and Canadian troops landed on a 50-mile stretch of coastline in the Normandy region of France. Many people lost their lives that day, but they successfully created a platform or a foothold from which to work. And when that happened, it was considered to be the beginning of the end of World War II. Hitler was notified that there was probably going to be an invasion. And the United States and her allies knew that in order to successfully win the war, they needed to establish a foothold over there, a platform from which to work. Hitler had a man by the name of Rommel that he gave responsibility of defending the coastline. And I think he had like over 2,000 miles of coastline, very well fortified. So the United States was involved in a form of deception to try to make him think they were amassing their troops at a different place from where they really attacked. And through that, they were able to establish that foothold over there. Many people lost their lives. But it was the beginning of the end for Hitler. In like manner, Satan would like to establish a platform within each of us from which to do his work. Today, I would like to look at the life of King Saul. And as we go through that, over that, I would like for us to take lessons. It's not that we want to put Saul down. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 11, Paul said, "All these things happened unto them for ensamples, and they were written for our admonition." To take a look at King Saul, to give you just a little bit of a backdrop, going to 1 Samuel chapter 7. Here and there I might pick out a few verses to read, but you can follow along somewhat and pick up on the points that I would like to make. Y'all are familiar with the priest Eli and his sons. They had lost their lives in a battle with the Philistines. And Samuel was a young man during that time, young boy. And he also led the Israelites against the Philistines. But the Israelites were still subservient to the Philistines to an extent. And the battles that Samuel went with them to fight, he was victorious in this, but it was through miraculous means of God helping him. The Philistines had so worked it out that the Israelites needed to come to them if they needed any metal work done in gardening tools or plows or whatever. They had to come to the Philistines. The Israelites might have had some files among themselves that they could use to sharpen their implements. But swords and weapons of war were few and hard to come by. And it was in this scenario that Saul came on the scene. Samuel had led Israel to victory and in various battles. And as he was growing older, he tried to establish his sons to also be judges in Israel. His two sons' names were Joel and Abiah. But they took bribes and they perverted judgment. And so Israel wanted a king. Saul was an ordinary man growing up on a farm, except for one thing. From his shoulders and upward, he was taller than any of the Israelites. Handsome young man. If you go on over to chapter 10 of 1 Samuel, Saul had been sent by his dad to look for some asses that were lost, and him and a servant went and they searched everywhere that they could think of for these animals, and they were just couldn't find them. And then one of them heard, the servant heard that Samuel was close by in a village. And they came up with the idea of asking him if he could tell them where they were. And through that encounter, Samuel informed them that his father's asses were found. But through that encounter, Samuel communed with Saul, and in a private ceremony, he anointed him king over Israel. It's not really something that Saul was looking for or something that Saul wanted. Saul went back home to his farm, his dad's farm. But then later, the time came that Samuel publicly announced Saul to be king. And they had to look for him. They couldn't find him. You see, I think Saul was shy. He probably did not like public attention. They had to inquire of God, where is Saul? And God told them, the Lord told them that he's hidden among the stuff. And so they had to go and go where they had a bunch of stuff, and they found him and brought him out. And he was publicly announced as being king of Israel. And even after this, he went home again to his farm. And it was shortly after this that Nahash, king of the Ammonites, I'd like to read verse 1 and 2 of Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 11. It says here, "Then Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh-Gilead. And all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us, and we will serve thee. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon all Israel." Nahash was a very wicked man. And God help us, may we never try to make any kind of covenant with the devil, with Satan. Nahash had the reputation, he had already made several people subservient to himself, and he would take the men and take out the right eye. And he gave these people from Jabesh-Gilead the option of either him coming and killing them or take out their right eye. And reading in the book of Josephus, his reason for this was that when they would fight and they would have shields to protect themselves, if their right eye was out, they would have to have a lot more of their head exposed to be able to see. And in normal fighting, they could expose and they could look out the side with just one eye. But if this eye was blind, they had to expose a lot more with their shields, which made them inferior in battle, exposed them a lot more to attack. And the Josephus writer, he would have implied that that was his reason for doing that. These people, they ask Nahash for 7 days of respite to see whether they could get someone to help them. And he was so overconfident that he had so intimidated the people, he didn't figure they could find anyone. So he said, sure, I'll give you 7 days. And when Saul heard about this, the Spirit of God came upon him. And he rallied the Israelites to go and fight Nahash. God helped him to be victorious in battle, and King Nahash was killed. Now, can you imagine the rejoicing of those people when that obstacle was removed? Here was a man that was determined that he was going to kill them or take their right eye out. And if you can put yourself in Saul's place, some of you young people in here who are involved with the fire department, know a little bit what an adrenaline rush is. Imagine the victory and the rejoicing that went on with these people and how happy they were for Saul that he was victorious and how he felt. If you go to 1 Samuel 13, Saul goes on and establishes his kingdom. But I do think that in that victorious battle that Saul had and that adrenaline rush that he got, I think he allowed Satan to sow a seed of pride in his heart. He was from his shoulders upward taller than everyone else of the Israelites. And here he was victorious with the enemy, and he was very well looked up to. Well, he established his kingdom, and he had, Jonathan, his son, was a grown man. And so he put 1,000 men under Jonathan of his soldiers that he had taken to himself. Jonathan goes out and smites a garrison of the Philistines. The Philistines had different camps established throughout Israel to keep control over them. Jonathan, with 1,000 men, went out and smote a garrison of the Philistines. And when Jonathan did this, Saul went and called Israel together again to continue fighting. Well, when the Philistines heard this, they were very upset. So they gathered their military together to straighten these people out. And when Saul saw and his people saw how many of the Philistines were gathered against them, his people were scared. It says that a lot of them deserted Saul. It says the multitude of the Philistines was so numerous as the sands by the seashore. And Saul had very small numbers compared to that. And so Saul's men were fearful. Some of them went and hid in caves, in thickets, in rocks, in high places, so that the Philistines couldn't find them. And Saul also was scared when he saw how few people he had. Samuel had made an arrangement with him to come and sacrifice and help him. Well, in the allotted time that Saul thought Samuel should be there, he didn't show up. 1 Samuel 12. I'd like to read verse. I said that wrong. Yeah, in 1 Samuel chapter 13, in verse 8, it says here, talking about Saul, he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings, and he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul goes on and tells him how that the people were leaving and that he just felt like he had to go on and do the sacrifice. That was very presumptuous of Saul. You know, backing up just a little bit, how would it have been if Saul and Jonathan would have sought the Lord's direction? How much better would that have been if they would have sought the Lord's direction before Jonathan just went out and smit that garrison? But they just did what they thought they should do. In spite of all this, God helped Saul to be very victorious in fighting the Philistines and also in fighting the Amalekites. If we go to 1 Samuel 14 and 15, we can read of different accounts where Saul was very victorious and how that he was given the command to destroy the Amalekites. And in all this, Saul being victorious in battle, the spirit of pride kept growing. Satan, I believe, kept enlarging his platform and making inroads in his life. He was given a direct command to totally annihilate, destroy the Amalekites. I'd like to read a few verses in 1 Samuel 15. Verse 13 says, "And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord." This was just directly after he came back from his military campaign against the Amalekites and had so grossly disobeyed that he saluted Samuel in this way. Drop down to verse 16. "Then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And Saul said, Say on. And Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king." I find it interesting how that Saul, after being so grossly negligent in following after God's command, that one of the first things he told Samuel is, "I have obeyed the command of the Lord." Josephus writes that the reason God was so upset with Saul is that he used his power to have victory over his enemies, and then yet was so grossly negligent in following his commands. After this, God allowed circumstances to come into Saul's life where Saul should have asked God for direction. For instance, Goliath came on the scene. But God had to send David. In all this time, Satan got more and more control over Saul with a foothold he had on him. After David killed Goliath and Israel had victory over the Philistines, in this ensuing battle, Saul's pride shows even more. If you go to 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 7 through 9, it says here, and this was after they had come back from the battle with the Philistines after the killing of giant Goliath. It says, "And the women answered one another as they played and said, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very wroth, and the saying displeased him. And he said, They have ascribed unto David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but thousands. And what can he have more but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day forward." From that day forward, David ended up being Saul's enemy. You know, David sat, he played the harp for Saul, and Saul really had a good experience out of his contact with David. But there were two different occasions where David was sitting at Saul's table that Saul threw a javelin at David, trying to smite him to the wall. And both times, David eluded him. Next, he tried getting him with deceit. And then he also, with his military, tried to run him down in his efforts to try to kill David. There was also a time that one of the priests, God's priests, not knowing that Saul was after David, he gave David some sustenance, gave him some help. And through that, Saul had 85 priests killed that wore the linen ephod. And in the city of Nob, the city of priests, he slew men, women, children, and infants. Saul had this done in his anger against David because one of them had helped David. And the one that helped him did not realize that Saul was against David. In all this, David was probably more loyal to Saul than anyone else Saul had around him, because Saul was God's anointed. In the end, Saul sought direction from a witch, a woman noted to have direct connection to evil spirits. If there was anything good that could be said of Saul in his latter days, is that he did not, even when he knew that his end was here, he did not desert his people. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, not going to read that, but it'd be an interesting read for you if you like history. The first chapter of 2 Samuel tells how Saul was killed and Jonathan, and how David wept and lamented and rent his clothes when he heard that they were killed. David said, "Oh, how the mighty have fallen." And a lot more in there in 2 Samuel chapter 1. If we allow Satan to have a platform or a foothold in our life, in our heart, it really gives him a whole lot more ability to work his will within us. May we never give in to him. I would like to turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 12 says, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Go back to verse 10. Says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Verse 13, Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. I would like to encourage us in our endeavors. One lesson that I get, and Josephus writes about this. Josephus was a noted historian, and I enjoy history. And so I've been reading quite a bit in that book. And Josephus had this to say concerning David and Saul. He said Saul almost never sought direction and advice from God before his endeavors. And he said David almost always did. And so today, in our endeavors, let us realize our need of God, our need of His direction in our lives. And His Spirit will never lead us in anything, in any way, contrary to His Word. Cannot separate Him from that, because Jesus is the Word. May we be true and faithful to the call of His Spirit. Let's kneel for prayer.